Then one day, Doc was deemed too much trouble to deal with, and was sent into the future to arrive in the Deathlands. The agents of Operation Kronos immediately regretted the decision and took off after him in hot pursuit. But there was no way to track the old man in the vast wasteland that was the Deathlands. The agents of Kronos had long ago given up the chase as impossible, but Doc kept running. Finally, he wandered, dazed and confused, into some serious trouble with a lunatic baron before accidentally encountering the companions. Mildred knelt down next to Doc and tenderly stroked his hair.
Sweet Jesus! Look what they've done to him! Doc might annoy the hell out of me at times, but he's no coward. The old coot has proved that 1,000 times. The horrors he must have endured at the hands of those white coats.
Doc had once claimed that Operation Kronos was a subdivision of Over Project Whisper, the group that built the redoubts and invented the Matrans units. Was that in fact true? Were there perhaps other unknown groups prowling through the redoubts of the world? There was very little doubt about the bases that they knew for certain, except that everybody they met was usually an enemy. Kneeling, Jack handed Doc the dropped sword stick, and the trembling scholar hugged it tightly to his heaving chest.
Sorry. I seem to have lost control there for just a moment. I will be fine in a trice. Really, I will.
Theophilus?
Doc looked up in shock at Ryan's scarred face. It was the very first time he could recall the man using his Christian name, Dr. Theophilus Algernon Tanner.
If those white coats are coming, then we'll face the entire fucking lot of them together, old friend.
A long minute passed as Doc breathed deeply, the color slowly returning to his features. Then the silver-haired gentleman reached out and clasped Ryan's hand in a powerful grip. It always caught the one-eyed man by surprise that Doc looked 60, but really was only in his late 30s and as strong as a horse. His mind had been damaged, but not his body, and not his fighting spirit.
You hear me, Doc? Together.
Together, my friend. And please allow me to apologize for my earlier lapse. You see, I...
Fuck it. It don't mean shit.
Doesn't. And anybody who says they've never been scared is a liar. Gaia knows we've all been there.
Fucking A.
Well said, young man. Fucking A indeed.
Well, as long as we're not going anywhere, then we better get ready for company. Get hard, people. If the white coats do come for us, it's gonna be bloody.
The fleeting moment of camaraderie was past. Back to the grim business of staying alive. This new Matrans unit was the same as every other, a hexagonal room made of seamless armaglass, with small hidden vents near the ceiling, one door with concealed hinges, and an operating lever to open it. The only difference was the color. As the rest of the companions prepared to leave the Matrans unit, JB eased the M4000 shotgun off his shoulder and passed the weapon to Mildred. Tucking away her ZKR revolver, the physician expertly racked the scattergun to chamber a 12-gauge cartridge.
I wonder why they haven't hit us already.
Why? No need. Where we go? Trapped like rats in a shitter.
Any grenades?
No grens, plas, or pipe bombs. If we happen to run into a Sec-Hunter droid, just aim at the eyes and stay out of reach of its blades.
Good luck with trying that tactic.
Mildred pulled a plastic bottle out of her med kit. She splashed some moonshine on a strip of cloth normally used for a bandage, then tied it around her mouth.
In case they try to use sleeping gas, I don't know how much it'll help, but this should buy us a little time.
Everybody took a mask and tried not to make a face as the sharp smell of the home-brewed alcohol filled their nostrils. Keeping a close watch on the door, Ryan checked his weapons one last time. He had 3 full clips. After that, it would be hand-to-hand with a Ponga. In preparation, Ryan loosened the knife and the leather sheath on his belt.
Okay, I'm on point. Jack and Christy, cover me. Mildred and Doc, hold off as backup. JB, you bring up the rear.
He had almost issued instructions to Dean, too, but his son had left the group a few months ago. His absence felt like a ragged wound deep inside Ryan. But pain was a part of life, and he accepted it as such. Only the dead felt nothing. As the other companions moved into position, Ryan pressed an ear against the door, listening for the sounds of any movement beyond. The silence was thick and heavy. Gingerly, he ran his hands along the jamb, searching for booby traps. JB then stepped forward and ran a small pocket compass along the surface of the metal. The magnetic needle didn't quiver once, to indicate a hidden magnetic switch or mass proximity fuse. The compass was a recent acquisition, found inside a cereal box in the ruins of a pre-dark convenience store. It was a toy, nothing more, laughably inaccurate compared to a Boy Scout compass or a military-issue model. However, most of the pre-dark compasses the companions found had been demagnetized by the EMP blasts of the nukes that had burned down civilization. Incredibly, the toy still worked, and that alone made it invaluable.
Looks clean. At least no traps that I can find.
You know, they may not have attacked us yet because they don't know we're here.
Fair enough. Let's try for a night creep first. We go soft and silent. No blasters until absolutely necessary. Jack, get ready.
Ready!
Triple red.
Advancing to the door, Ryan pulled the lever. As the door swung aside, he slipped into the anteroom, then the control room, with his blaster leading the way. Nobody was in sight. Ryan waited as Jack and Christy moved into the control room. Then the three companions quickly spread out so that they wouldn't offer a group target for any snipers. Moving in unison across the control room, the three listened hard, but couldn't hear a thing out of the ordinary. Ryan reached the opposite door, and at Ryan's signal, the other companions entered the control room, their blasters searching for any possible dangers. Staying close to the rear, Doc seemed uneasy, the scholar constantly switching his black powder blaster from hand to hand to dry his palms on a pant leg.
Nothing here.
Ah! Ryan abruptly spun around and fired from the hip. Across the room, something exploded in the shadows under the main console, spraying out bits of plastic and wiring. Advancing slowly, Ryan scowled at the smoking device, wondering what the hell it could be. Then his eye went wide as the pieces lying on the floor began to ripple through an array of colors to finally match the pattern of the floor. But the effect only lasted a few moments before the smashed electronic circuitry of the broken device made an unusual noise and the plastic faded into a neutral beige.
Shit. I seen Lizard do. The machine?
That is a probe droid. A robotic hunter for Operation Kronos.
Like a dog?
Exactly. It is just one of their many toys. But if I recall correctly, a probe droid is for true emergencies only. By gad, where are we? Their headquarters?
Does the place look familiar?
They all do, dear lady. I always assumed that was done deliberately as another of their endless defenses. If an enemy force jumped in, they would still have to waste precious time making sure they were at the right location before attacking.
The way we do.
Exactly.
Any chance two of them dogs?
Two? Oh, good Lord, no. You're looking at about several million dollars worth of advanced robotics lying in pieces on the floor. They never even sent one of these after me before. I learned of them only by accident when I was crawling through an air vent in one of their insufferable prisons.
During an escape attempt?
During one of my many attempted escapes. They caught me that time and punished me severely. Then the scientists decided I was too much trouble and, well, you know the rest.
A hunting probe. If the Whitecoats didn't send one after Doc, then we could damn well guess what it was looking for this time.
Us. The whole nuking group. I thought there had been something watching us in the redoubts for a while.
Well, looks like they've found us at last.
Mildred knelt alongside the broken machine and fumbled through the wreckage. She then lifted a flexible cable into view.
No, they haven't found us. See this? It's a USB cable, and I don't see any radio inside the probe.
Moving the end of the cable closer to the master control board, she pointed at a USB port set about a foot off the floor. Mildred held the cable near the input jack, then moved it slightly farther away again, just to be safe.
That's where this goes. So maybe this droid knows we're here, but it never got the chance to tell anybody.
Maybe. On the other hand, if they were here, they'd be using the SecVid cams in the walls and not some fancy robot. The Whitecoats must be in another redoubt.
Makes sense. But there's only one way to be sure.
Crossing the control room, Ryan went to the exit and yanked open the door. The outside hallway was empty. All of the doors along both sides of the passageway closed as usual. The floor was spotlessly clean, the air from the vents warm and clean, smelling ever so slightly of disinfectant chemicals. Personally, Ryan would have been more comforted by a few scorch marks from explosions and some decaying corpses. A redoubt full of dead he could comprehend. Why the Predark military had removed all of the supplies and left the bases stripped bare had never made any sense.
Stay triple red, people. Chill anything that moves against us.
The desert night air was cool and sweet, scented with the flowers from the nearby cactus grove. The roiling, polluted clouds overhead had broken, allowing the crescent moon to shine a silvery light across the landscape, turning the Box Canyon a stark black and white. The only source of flickering color came from a small cook fire. Squatting around the crackling flames, the four Rogan brothers licked their fingers and wiped greasy mouths on grimy sleeves.
Now that was a good dog. Don't you think so, John?
The elder Rogan scowled at his brother.
Shut up.
John tossed a gnawed leg bone onto the fire. The impact stirred up a cloud of red embers that lifted into the air and danced about to float away on the breeze. Alan frowned.
Hey, I was only...
Go water the horses. This shithole didn't have anywhere near the number of people we were told. We ride at dawn.
The third brother, the large, bald man, was named Robert.
Hopefully two veal with some sluts.
He broke a bone in two and sucked out the dark marrow. A dirty silk scarf was wrapped around his throat, almost hiding a long, puckered scar that completely encircled his neck, the classic telltale mark of a hangman's noose. Dropping the pieces of bone into the flames, Robert rubbed a greasy hand across his bald head and smiled ruefully.
Been a long time since I showed some gaudy slut the ceiling. Two goddamn nuke in law.
Alan jerked a thumb at the darkness outside the nimbus of the firelight.
We still have the shovel. I'm sure if you really wanted to, you could still find the wrinkly. Maybe the ants haven't eaten much of the good stuff yet.
I do you before a rotter.
Without any expression, Alan gestured, and knives slipped from his sleeves into each hand.
Anytime you want to try, big brother.
Alan turned the blade slightly so that the feathered edge of the steel reflected the reddish light of the campfire. Moving back slightly, Robert raised his hands as if in surrender, and Alan now saw that one fist was holding a pipe bomb, the fuse smoldering and spitting sparks. The bald man gestured closer.
Come to Papa.
John dismissed them both with a wave of his scarred hand.
Cut the shit and get to work. Alan, the horses. Robert, go spell Ed.
Grinning broadly, Robert licked two dirty fingers and pinched out the fuse, then pulled the string from the pipe bomb and tucked it away into his voluminous jacket. The bomb itself went into a pouch on his belt.
Sure thing. No problem, bro.
Robert stood to walk away into the night. Alan tucked the blades away again.
Why's he always on my ass like that? I was only joking around.
He's bald as a rock, and you got a ponytail down to your balls. Figure it out for yourself. Now water the fragging horses, or do you want to try that knife trick on me?
Angry, Alan started to shoot back a taunt, but then saw his elder brother's face and thought better. John was in charge of the gang because he was the smartest. There was no denying that. But also because the other brothers were terrified of him. And there was no denying that either. Forcing a smile onto his face, Alan strolled away into the night, kicking at the sand to raise little dust clouds as he moved toward the remaining horses. As Alan vanished into the gloom, Edward appeared and sat on the ground. Taking a haunch of roasted meat from a rock near the crackling flames, the barrel-chested man started tearing off pieces like a wild muti. In spite of the cool evening, he had his shirt mostly unbuttoned, and a grisly necklace of shriveled trophies hacked off his enemies was clearly visible. Lighting a hand-rolled cig, John sucked in the sweet dark smoke of the Zoomer, nodding in satisfaction that he finally got the mixture of tobacco, marijuana, and wolfweed just right. A little too much of the tobacco, and you didn't get zoned. Too much of the Mary, and it tasted like dreck. Some people chatted about Shine as if it had tits in an ass, but weed was the cure for what ailed a man.
Is there any more?
Edward tried to crack the bone apart for the marrow, but the bone splintered in his enormous hands, and he cast the greasy mess into the flames. The glowing charcoal sputtered and started to give off thick smoke. John let the Zoomer dangle from his lips.
Nope. We each got a quarter. Sharing fair alike as always, bro.
Edward thumped a fist onto his hairy chest.
I'm bigger. I should get more.
Would, should, could, don't mean shit to me.
Ain't fair.
Blowing out a smoke ring, John debated getting rough when there was an unexpected flash of light.